Hello, I'm Bill Sisson, Executive Director of WBCSD North America, and welcome to another edition of Transformative Leadership in Business. I'm joined today by Martin Whitaker, the founder and CEO of Just Capital. Thank you for joining me today, Martin.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be here. Full disclosure, I don't consider myself the founder. I'm the founding CEO for sure, but Just Capital was really the brainchild of Deepak Chopra, Paul Tudor Jones, and four or five other board members who, for better or worse, decided to hire me 10 years ago to try and bring Just Capital to life.
Awesome. Well, thank you for clarifying that, Martin. You know, I think in today's discussion, I want to seek to gain some insights from your experience and leadership on the social responsibilities of business, and kind of in particular, the tensions that I think corporations are facing increasingly today on their diversity, equity, inclusion efforts, and balancing being a good corporate citizen and employer with mixed public opinion and reaction. I think today companies are under substantial pressures from investors to disclose business performance that is increasingly tied to these environmental and social issues, together with putting the right governance in place to navigate these risks and mitigate them. So, Martin, you were named by Business Insider's 2020's list of 100 people for transforming business and named as one of the most influential people in the boardroom and on corporate governance. You have an amazing career that includes capital market facing roles at Innovest and Swiss Re, and being a founding partner at Sonen Capital, an impact investing firm. You've spoken at the White House, on CNBC, BBC, and contributed to a whole bunch of business journals across the spectrum. I think you're clearly someone who knows how to evaluate business performance that goes well beyond balance sheets and income statements. So tell me, why Just Capital? What is its mission and the impact that you're trying to achieve?
Just Capital is a 501c3 nonprofit. The mission is really to try and create a race to the top for large corporations. That's really who we focus on right now, but it relates to business overall. The idea is that we define this concept of a just company, and we do that by asking Main Street America, ordinary people, how they think about business in society. What do they want companies to do more of or less of? And what things constitute this idea of a just business behavior? So it's a real pulse on how Main Street thinks about the roles of corporations in society. And it's a very common sense framework that relates to how companies treat their workforce, how they interact with the communities, how they treat the environment, the suppliers, their customers. Are they led with integrity? Things like that. That's created a model for us to track, measure, rank, and increasingly work with the leaders of large corporations to help them improve stakeholder performance. And of course, the business case for doing that is very powerful, as our investment work would show. So Just Capital is all about really trying to get the private sector to do more, tackle some of the root causes of some of the world's most systemic challenges. And I think we're building somewhat of a movement in that direction, as all the major players seem to see that as being increasingly important in a divided world where government seems to have difficulty really getting to grips with some of these root cause issues.
You couldn't have set up today's conversation any better with telling us what Just Capital is about. So thanks for that. I really do want to now delve into this deep issue of corporate diversity, equity, and inclusion. Folks call it DE&I, but not a lot of people really understand, and perhaps worse, misinterpret what it really is. So let's get into that. And from my perspective, I spent 33 years of my career in the private sector, and I recall management of these issues, you know, people responsibilities, addressing things like equal opportunity, diversity, was largely in the footprint of the human resources team. But now we've seen this kind of shift over the last 10 years where this DE&I topic is being more tied to a company's purpose and integrated into sustainability efforts. And kind of walk us through what this transition has looked like from your perspective.
Sure. I mean, you characterize it pretty well. When I first started in what became the ESG world, it was in the late 1990s. You mentioned the company, it was Innovest. And there we were looking at mostly environmental factors and what they meant in terms of risks and opportunities for investors. and how did you look at companies and analyze them through that lens? And increasingly, over that course of the 2000s, that social issues, governance issues emerged. Governance was more prominent because Enron, WorldCom, you know, we had a few years there where the world of governance completely changed and it became much more clear that those topics needed to be understood. The S was not particularly well appreciated by those who were pursuing an ESG approach. I would say it was kind of superficial in a lot of the data that was being gathered, even though at that time there was still a lot of work being done on human capital. I remember that a lot. Early work done by big consulting firms, human capital consulting firms, places like Mercer, who were doing a ton of work on workforce issues and how they really contributed to corporate value creation. And so I think we've seen a sort of convergence, I suppose, of these issues over the last decade, as you say, accelerated certainly by COVID, where the relationship between worker and company completely changed. And we're still kind of sifting through that. 2020 was such a year of upheaval. You mentioned DEI, George Floyd's murder and corporate reaction to that. You layered that onto the basically shutdown of the economy, the reopening of that economy, the disruptions to supply chains. It was just like a maelstrom, really, of social, economic, environmental, governance, societal issues that really caused, I think, a lot of people to fundamentally wonder, how do we get a handle on this from a corporate performance standpoint?
Let's delve into that a little bit, Martin. You brought George Floyd up, and it was a little over 4 years ago that that happened. And this really, in my mind, brought out these racial tensions and inequities back into mainstream focus. They've always been there. It just elevated it to a next level. And these issues ultimately did land in the boardroom of many companies. So how about taking us through that period? Because you were probably very much involved in some of those interactions. And so what did that issue really mean to corporate America at that time and the impact of how and what they responded with?
Let's just back up, because I think it's important to set the context. The issue of building strength through diversity, diversity of thought, diversity of experience, having representation in decision-making, that, as you said, was always there. It was always an issue of how do you attract and retain the best talent? How do you enter new markets? And so that issue of inclusion, making people feel as though whatever they were doing, wherever they were in the workplace, that they were heard, they were valued, they were empowered. And then this idea of equity, which probably been of the three areas like the most contentious, but really what that's about is equal access to opportunity. And so the underlying issues, I think, were there before, as you say. There were things which many companies were really being proactive about and doing so because they felt it was a strong business case. Then we get to George Floyd. And in the aftermath of that, there was such a rupture through American society at that time. And company leaders, like everybody else, people within companies felt, we got to do something. That this is not something that is separate from us and it has nothing to do with our business. We should say something. We should change the way we do things. We should start to think about our work differently. So there's a real acceleration of corporate self-assessment, obviously a lot of public statements, and a lot of goals being set around DEI targets. And we began to track those. It was an interesting year because we'd had a lot of success at Just Capital tracking corporate responses to COVID-19. What were they doing? We weren't judging their behavior so much as just tracking what they were doing. And it was a big success in terms of attracting a lot of media attention. We were the first, I think, to begin to put up a public database of how companies were responding across a set of data points. As you know, we are very data-driven, so we're really trying to be objective about measuring what companies were doing. So we thought, let's do the same thing on DEI. And we began to track what companies were doing. We realized that we had a lot of conversations with corporate leaders and realized that many companies actually needed help. There was a real lack of framework for how DEI issues should be viewed by a company given their stakeholders. Corporations' role in society more broadly. There's corporations' role within the communities where they operate, where they have stores, where they have suppliers. And then there's corporations' own employees. What do they do internally? And getting their own house in order. Multiple layers to this and a real lack of a framework to help companies figure out what to do. And so we were not only tracking what firms are doing, we also began to partner with others. We partnered with PolicyLink to really begin to create a framework, a set of criteria that companies could use to navigate. And that work has continued, and there are companies that are very much involved with that. It was a moment where, you know, I kind of look back and think, well, you had this one single moment where a massive issue all of a sudden became front and center for every company. It was very difficult to stay silent, very difficult for companies, even though they didn't really know what to do nothing. I think that's what's played out over the last few years.
Yeah, and I think it was really a moment where employees of companies were mobilizing and putting pressure on corporate leaders to do something. It was such an emotional reaction and response. And I applaud Just Capital and the efforts and partnerships you made to put it in a data-driven perspective so that there could be some degree of transparency on how companies were taking that on. I think that's really critical. It's critical across the spectrum of sustainability, if you will. But in particular, that issue was needing that moment. But now, rightfully so, you talked about the 4 years since. You talked about a pandemic. You talked about an economy that's recovered or recovering or had to recover from that challenge, that issue that shut down markets across the world. You talked about the political dynamics that this country's been through in these 4 years. If you take a step back and think about it, it's amazing what's gone on. And yet now there seems to be this coordination almost, and strengthening of the public pushback against these very important issues that corporations rallied around. So there's sort of an attack, if you will, on corporate purpose, and driven largely through social media and other factors. But I'm wondering now what you're seeing and hearing from corporate leaders in this moment of polarization and challenge that we're going through, and perhaps how you think companies should be responding in these periods, in these times, and going forward.
It is a very interesting and conflicting time. We get different kinds of cross currents. So publicly, obviously, corporate leaders and companies are much more reticent to speak up and speak out on DEI, but not just on DEI, on lots of other controversial issues, even increasingly on climate change, for example. And so, whereas before 2020, companies felt as though speaking up, speaking out, having a social, the public expected that. We did a lot of polling on what were people's expectations of companies over that period. But since then, there was an increase in expectation from society, from people as consumers, as workers, as investors, as community members, as just interested parties. But the expectation on companies to speak up was increasing. And so a lot of companies did. Then we kind of almost moved into a post-truth environment. What I mean by that is saying something needed to be backed up by action. It was deeds that counted, not words. And so saying something about what you're doing on climate or DEI or some other issue, you know, you had to back that up with like actual data and real outcomes and real actions. And that was where it got a little harder, because it was like, I'm a runner, and so, you know, I want to run a marathon. But it was almost like they're concentrating too hard on looking good at the finish line. Look at me, look at what I've just done, and not actually putting the training in and the hard work to actually run 26 miles. You got to do the real work on climate, on DEI, on investing in your workforce, on any of these more controversial issues. But I would say the same about a lot of stakeholder issues. So I think that is what is happening now. The data would suggest a lot of companies are continuing to invest in their culture, human capital, employee wellness initiatives. They are continuing to invest in programs that make their companies more purposeful, that build employee engagement, that make their companies more inclusive, all of the underlying issues of DEI, and embed that within this broader concept of human capital and culture within companies. I think that's where it's going. So that work continues. It continues to evolve. It gets more sophisticated, and it gets much more tied to business outcomes and business performance. But what's also happening at the same time is all of this is being done in private, because the employees are really the important beneficiaries of that. And so companies are focused internally. The external story, the idea that I need to appeal to a certain consumer, or I want to look good or say the right thing or improve my brand or have this be part of a marketing campaign, that's kind of less important these days, because unless you've actually done the internal work, you know, A, you would come across as inauthentic, and B, you would risk being caught in some kind of backlash. So a lot of that is what's happening as far as we can see in terms of the data right now.
I love your analogy for the marathon, because being a runner and such, and the role, the training, and really learning the way in which your body is going to react under certain stresses. I used to run myself, but never a marathon. But I do know the implications of not being ready for a race. And what is a corporation at the end of the day? It's part of a competitive landscape of other corporations. They're all competing. And these issues are, in many ways, increasingly a proxy, in my mind anyway, for the business performance of the company and how it's addressing these issues. So it's really an interesting time for business leaders to understand how to deal with these topics. And we're doing a lot of work right now looking at how the narrative of these issues is being presented, and perhaps trying to better align that narrative with the materiality and the implications to the business itself.
You could draw a connection between DEI and what companies, the journey they've been on that, and climate. In the late 90s, mid-late 90s, early 2000s, companies want to say and look like they're doing the right thing on climate, but the actual investment, the actual work being done was not sophisticated. And that's okay. It was just early. Companies were just trying to figure out what to do. There were no standards, no frameworks, very little data. And frankly, not a huge amount of expertise on how a company could go around about decarbonizing, or what does a just transition look like for a company, or what does it mean, scope one, scope two, scope three. None of that was really in sophisticated enough form. I think DEI is going through these different phases of what does it really mean for business? Why should investors really care? How do I know I'm doing the right thing? How do I know that I'm producing the outcomes that I want? What data do I need to gather? And I would say DEI is even tougher because it speaks to issues of identity, of human emotion, people's lived experience. It's less scientific in a way than climate change, which ultimately is a geophysical issue that's having obviously a huge social impact. But DEI is much more personal. And so it does make it trickier to do that. But I think companies ultimately are always pushing to be better, to outcompete, to generate value. And you have to look at that in terms of your human capital and your people, are your workers, your customers, and so on. And so you can't ignore these incredibly important social issues.
Yeah, and I think that business leaders and businesses themselves continue to be the trusted resources to try to address some of these big challenges that we're facing. Business is fundamentally essential for driving and addressing some of these challenges. Again, it's back to their business performance, their risk, the implications, the materiality that they're facing with these challenges. And it's important to them to deal with them. Let me segue into one other piece that was associated with some work that I know you were involved with at the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, where I'm obviously very active. You were one of over 80 commissioners that contributed to something we call the Business Commission to Tackle Inequality. And this body of work was driven by this core mission around these issues to mobilize the private sector on tackling inequality, unlocking opportunity, and being the bridge to inclusive growth. So, Martin, you know, maybe a little bit of an opportunity for you to reflect on that period you were involved in that work and continue to be, and perhaps how you might recommend business leaders take a look at that well-intentioned work and use some of those resources. What do you think?
Well, if you go back to the beginning of Just Capital and you were to listen to Paul Tudor Jones's TED Talk from 2015, I think it was really around his fervent belief that inequality was such a scourge, and it gave rise to all sorts of other social challenges that ultimately we ended up having to fix anyway. He was really motivated by the idea of business leadership to tackle inequality. So it's kind of full circle for me. And it was one of the reasons why Just was started. So very passionate about that work. Look, I'm a capitalist. I think capitalism is the best engine for lifting people out of poverty, for advancing the human condition, and for addressing some of the root causes of a lot of our problems in a sustainable way. Business's role in that has to be more prominent. I think this is not a prescriptive approach. I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all model. I think companies would see it largely in their best interest to really equip themselves to be more successful in the future by thinking about their broader role in society. And the work we did on the commission really creates a framework for that. we dealt obviously a lot with multinational companies who are dealing with all sorts of different circumstances around the world. Having a way to process, how can we think about inequality? How can we think about problems that arise from that in extreme forms? And what can we do about it? One of the things that I think business can do better, quite honestly, Bill, in this space is collaborate more effectively. Starting to see that in some areas on specific issues around, in our case, around worker financial health and well-being. We have an initiative around that at Just Capital. We see a lot of companies coming to that to learn from each other and share experiences and best practices. And I think we could see that in a broader sense around inequality. You know, it'd be interesting to ask, if you got the world's largest corporations together, what can we do together to be more effective in addressing specific objectives around inequality and around extreme poverty in the world? How might we collaborate? What might that partnership actually look like? Where should we focus? I think there's a lot of merit to that approach, and I commend WBCSD to really bringing that together. There's a lot of depth, a lot of perspectives, and a lot of expertise in the work we've done so far. The key is now to bring that to a really simple, actionable approach that business leaders can really justify spending time on.
I couldn't agree with you more on the power and the need for more effective collaboration, particularly on this issue. It is time for company leaders to leverage organizations like ours, but there are others out there, to really get into these conversations, but in a place that's safe for the conversations to lead to credible actions that will seek to address the needs of the business community to tackle these issues. Martin, unbelievably, we're getting to the end here. Time always flies on these conversations, and never enough. Feels like we've just captured a mere glimpse of...
We're scratching the surface, Bill. These are
exactly
big issues.
That infamous. Yeah. But these things are going to continue to be challenging topics. Maybe you could give us a few thoughts of optimism on what your vision is for the years that lie ahead, and maybe what you hope and see coming as the good of all of this.
Well, I am an optimist. I wouldn't do this if I wasn't. I can tell you that I have a very big board of directors at Just Capital, and they all have incredible experience at the senior operating levels of corporations, institutions, and civil society. And every one of them would say, if they're on this podcast with us, would say these issues are front and center in our boardroom. These issues are front and center in the conversations that we are having in the C-suite, at the board. How do we navigate them? And how do we look at this as an issue of trying to solve a problem, not as an issue to avoid or dodge? And it's that commitment that I really see. It kind of drives me forward. I feel like there's a lot of appetite, a lot of hunger for solutions. Even in a politically divided world, certainly in America, I even see echoes of what Just is doing in a political sense, because we talk to Republicans and Democrats, we talk to everybody on a fully representative basis, and we see a lot of people wanting the same thing. When it comes to business's role in society, honestly, Bill, we don't see a lot of disagreement. We see a lot of agreement. And surprisingly so on issues where you'd think it would be divided, but actually most people want the same thing. And I bet you if we went around the world and polled, and hopefully we'll have the resources to do that one day, I think you'd probably see a lot of agreement too in how can companies really create value for all their stakeholders, why that's better for investors. The roadmap for doing that is not rocket science. It's not beyond our grasp. It's reminding business leaders of some of these kitchen table values and how to look after stakeholders. So I think there is a lot more agreement, a lot more unity than meets the eye, especially when it comes to business. I think there's a roadmap that exists that business can follow that will produce value for everybody. And I see a lot of will to try and go down that road. So that's why I'm optimistic, and I really appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about that, and hopefully we can build that movement together.
Thank you, Martin. That was optimistic. These are necessary, if not critically essential, conversations to put in place. So thank you for taking the time with me today, and for being a great and impactful transformational leader in business.